From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 8th day of February, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. We'll hear the second part of my conversation with Ed Usad, agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota and Extension there. And then we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Don Day, and take up the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Hey, and don't forget that you can also sign up right now at willag.org for our spring outlook with the Farm Doc team at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's just $25 on Tuesday, March the 8th. Do it right now, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn in Chicago today settled at $6.32 and a quarter. That was down 3 cents. May at $6.34, 3 and a quarter lower. In December futures at $5.82 a bushel, up 1 cent. The March soybeans 12 and 3 quarters lower at $15.69 a bushel. May contracted $15.72 and a half, down 13 and 3 quarters. And November beans 3 lower at $14.13. Bean meal at $4.54.10, $1.30 higher for the day. The bean oil at $63.35, down $1.90. Soft red winter wheat lead March at $7.78 and 3 quarters, up a dime, and the hard red March at $8.01 and a quarter, 9 and a half cents higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $146.17 and a half, 22 and a half cents lower. Feeders are down, or rather up $1.85 at $166.87 and a half, and lean hogs at $103.80, up $2.52 and a half cents. Crude oil at $89.37 a barrel, down $1.95. Diesel fuel at $2.79 and 3 tenths, 6 and a tenth lower, and gasoline on the wholesale price down 5 and 9 tenths of a cent at $2.62 a gallon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good to talk to you today, Todd.
Tell me what happened in Chicago.
Well, you know, we sort of turned around Tuesday in the respects that yesterday we had a tremendous rally, picking up on the weather, picking up on some Chinese business, picking up on the tensions in Russia and the Ukraine, and all those things put together had a tremendous day yesterday. The front end corn was the highest it's been since back in July yesterday. The D set a record all-time high for this contract to December corn. And then today, of course, we had a little bit of angst over the idea that we're going to have a crop report tomorrow. So a little bit of setback from the highs here, just a little profit taking before we get into it. But then we got the Stats Canada number on the wheat stocks, and they come in lower than we expected, about 10 million less than last year, but you know, about 2 million metric tons less than what they were expecting to be on everything that way. So we saw wheat take over as the leader today, being up 7 to 9 cents here, but corn and beans, a lot of profit taking today and just a little bit of liquidation before the report tomorrow.
What are the expectations for tomorrow's USDA reports at 11 a.m.?
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. There's been a lot of expectations of cutting the South American crop. We sort of think that, like I think that's why we saw the setback today, was generally our people in, I guess, Kansas City now don't tend to take the full cuts that some of them are projecting that way. So we probably won't see the numbers we've been looking, you know, been thrown about in the trade a lot that way. So I think that's a little bit why we saw the setback today. But, you know, we do tend to think we'll see a setback in the numbers down there. The weather has just not been good enough. Some of it's been too wet, some of it's been too dry, and we're not, harvest isn't progressing along quite as fast as they'd like to see it down there. So I think all in all, there'll be bullish numbers, but maybe not for a big uptick tomorrow afterwards.
By Kansas City, you mean some of the statisticians that belong to the United States Department of Agriculture.
Yep.
What is it that you think producers after the report should consider going through the end of the month of February, given the price setting that will be done for crop insurance?
Well, I think that basically it depends on what, you know, how much they've got sold here and looking at it like that. You know, we're looking at some awfully attractive numbers here. The December corn, you know, at 582 here today, the last tick in the close, some good numbers there that way. I think that, you know, it's awfully hard to say. We would love to say we'd buy a put here, but the puts have been terribly, terribly expensive. So, you know, we might have to look at something different. But, you know, I think rewarding this market, I think we've got a chance for $6, but Maybe if we get a little bump up back to, where we could say maybe 585 to 595, I think that you need to reward the market with a little cash sale.
Thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and is the only person that has appeared on every panel of our Beef House event since 1991, or at least a panel at every one of our functions at the Beef House. So 30 years to begin with, and again, he's on the panels this year. You can watch him in action if you'd like. It's easy to do. The Farm Doc team will be there. Our panelist will be there, and it all costs just $25, including that Beef House lunch and the rolls and the coffee in the morning. Register today at willag.org. Let's hear now the rest of the conversation we started yesterday with Ed Ossett, agricultural economist for University of Minnesota Extension. Yesterday, we talked about the commodity markets directly, but I did ask Ed about some of the fundamentals under the market and what it is that he tracks to get an idea of where corn and soybean prices might be headed and what difference that makes. He had a couple of suggestions.
I like to track margins in the industry. Now, the soybean crushing industry is doing gangbusters right now. It's not something that people publish, are very open about the players in the soybean crushing industry, but they're doing very well. Soybean crushing margins, I think, are just about as good as they've been for, a decade. I've talked to a few players in the industry, and nobody's telling me, boy, this is almost as good as back then. No, it's just flat out great. And by the way, there have been announcements in the last year of 10 different major expansions or new facilities in soybean crushing, 10 of them. It adds up to over $2 billion worth of investment. Now, these plants, Todd, they don't start up in a week. These are things coming on stream in the next year to 2 or 3 years. But that's all you need to know about the soybean crushing industry and how well it's doing. When 10 different players, some new, some existing, are expanding, are building new. What's an odd contrast to that is the ethanol industry, which miraculously turned margins from very so-so to break even. And last fall, October, November, December, they took off. Ethanol crushing margins took off. Had an interesting conversation with a manager who said that he said the only puzzling thing about it, it's wonderful, he said, this was before the end of the year. It's wonderful. The only thing that bothers me is I can't explain why. He couldn't understand why the margins were so good. Well, I read an article last week out of Reuters that those ethanol margins have collapsed in a very short period of time. So you've got one industry, soybean crushing. By the way, for producers, you got to love a healthy industry, a processing industry that keeps demand that indicates strong demand and good news about the soybean world. Don't like to hear about ethanol margins, which we're doing great but in retrospect, a very short period of time, and now sluggish again. That's two contrasting stories there on the processing front.
Do you know what the capacity of those 10 new plants or expansions might be in total?
They often announce that. I mean, I could dig them up. I'm looking at the list here. I'm going to pull it out. Now, this $2 billion, this is just from me. Oftentimes when companies announce an expansion or an investment, they're often pretty upfront about, we're going to spend $350 million. To build a crushing plant in Iowa. And in that, they'll tell you how big it's going to be. So last week, Actually, 2 weeks ago, AGP announced that they were going to build a new soy processing plant in David City, Nebraska. It'll have the capacity to process more than 50 million bushels of soybeans a year. Last week, a company I've never heard of, 375 million dollars to build a crushing plant near Norfolk, Nebraska, 38.5 million bushels. When these players, you know, soybean crushing, the economies of scale are there. They don't build plants that crush a million bushels a year. I mean, they pretty much start at 30, 40 million bushels a year and get bigger from there. They're huge plants.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Take care.
You too. That's Ed Essett. He's an agricultural economist at University of Minnesota Extension. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Don Day. He's a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for taking the time with me today.
Thanks for having me.
I would like you to look back over the winter to this point, maybe all the way through the fall, and to assess the western part of the United States through the Plain States, kind of the winter wheat growing regions from Texas all the way through the Dakotas, including maybe Nebraska and Kansas and such. Give me an idea where they stand. It feels as if the whole of the area is really short and remains really short of precipitation in all kinds of forms.
Well, let's start north and then we'll go south. The news is better for the northern plain. So for the Dakotas, if you were to look at the last 3 months of precipitation and then go back further, let's say going back 6 months, back to late summer and early fall, you'd find that North Dakota, parts of eastern and northern areas of South Dakota, and even areas of far eastern Montana have actually had near or above average precipitation. However, once you go south, you know, that's where the dryness really starts to pick up. As you look across Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, into southeastern eastern Colorado, and then the panhandles of Oklahoma and Texas, and across the rest of Oklahoma, those areas have had below normal precipitation for the last 3 months. And if you were to go back 6 months, you know, we would find that those areas are still drier than normal. The southern plains, the southern areas especially, Kansas, Oklahoma, eastern Colorado, the panhandles, those areas have suffered the most. And in this La Nina, even though it's in a weakened state, it's still making impacts. And I am concerned about those southern plains areas still feeling the effects of La Nina as we go into spring.
So as you look into spring, and usually the equinox or sometime in that spring time frame, persistence gives up, so dry conditions might give up and change is afoot. Do you see anything that would change conditions in those areas?
Well, I do think that when, you know, bringing up La Nina again, it's reaching its point of probably maximum strength over the last 6 weeks or so, and is starting to show signs of little chinks in its armor. It's going to be a slow process. But as we get into late spring and summer, we're hoping that maybe precipitation in those southern plains areas will be better than it has been over the last two growing seasons. And I think there's that potential there. The trick is all about timing. Is that precipitation going to start to increase and come at the right time to help out those areas? And I think that is a concern. It may be later than earlier.
And finally, a forecast. Anything that we should be aware of note across the middle part of the country this week or next week?
Well, as we go through the rest of this week and into the weekend, we are going to enjoy a bit of a warm-up. Temperatures are going to be moderating, and there's really not a lot going on. But do not rest on your laurels. It does appear that the middle to the end of next week, we've got one more good salvo of some pretty cold air coming out of the northwestern territories of Canada and across a good portion of the central and western United States. And I do see the potential for the cold returning, and I also do see some Corn Belt snow possibly in the forecast for middle late next week as well. So we've got a little respite now, but the middle to the end of February winter's got more tricks up its sleeves.
You know, I'm not all that comfortable on my laurels, so, you know. Hey, Don, thank
you. You know, a lot of people are like, what? What did he say? What are laurels?
Hey, thank you, Don. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. On Tuesdays, we always check in on the agricultural energies and the broader spectrum of energies, and Stephen Platt is now here with us. He's from Archer Financial Services. Thank you, Steve. What has changed for you in the last month, and I'm going to guess quite a bit in the energy sector?
Well, the market has strengthened probably more than I thought, but the last 2 days, where we've seen overall some pretty explosive moves, both up and down intraday of over $2 at many points in the energy complex. And they have been very explosive on Ukraine, OPEC, and demand considerations, along with the low inventories. Those factors remain in the background and are a source of support to the market. I think the market has actually reached some levels which are probably indicative of an overbought condition. These levels have not been seen since 2014, just before shale exploded to the upside in many of the U.S. producing regions, putting a lot of pressure on OPEC.
Well, what is your assessment in the marketplace then?
I believe with crude reaching a high of $93 on Friday, the highest level, as I said, since August of 2014, and a year ago, we were at 56. This market has done quite a lot and priced in a lot. The other markets have also gained quite strongly. Gasoline has reached 272 on Friday versus 175 a year ago. Heating oil reached 293. Against 175 a year ago. I think noteworthy has been the diesel or heating oil. It's performed better than the gasoline and to a lesser extent crude. But overall, diesel stocks are low. And that's somewhat surprising, given some of the impact we've seen on transportation of jets and jet transportation on a global basis, and even in the U.S.
Can you tell me more about the decline in diesel fuel stocks?
The decline itself is worrisome in the diesel, as the crude slate, the type of crude you use to make refined products shifts to typically to heavier crudes and away from gasoline. This has not happened this winter. The slate has favored the lighter streams of crude. In addition, refinery capacity has not really recovered fully since the pandemic started. Some refineries closed down. Crude throughput is currently around 15.4 against about 16.6 prior to the pandemic. There's the last major refinery was built in the U.S. in 1977. And that's a key concern for me in that we have not really added additional production except through modernization of existing refineries and expanding their capacity. So there's been a general limitation on how much we can actually refine in this country. And that is holding back the production of diesel. I think that's going to be a concern going down the road, particularly if we get jet kero demand picking up at a time when freight traffic and the like is still quite high. That will continue to keep diesel strong relative to maybe crude and even gasoline.
Any final thoughts then before I let you go?
I think we have some signs that there could be a more two-way market starting to develop. The reason I say that is there has been some progress with respect to the U.S. and Iranian negotiations. I think some easing in the Ukrainian tension has also helped. In addition, output is increasing in the U.S., which with the DOE suggesting we could see production hit around 12 this year. It was 12.2 prior to the pandemic and could exceed that level in 2023. So our production is coming back, and this puts pressure on OPEC to expand their own production in order not to lose market share. And there was an agreement to allow the UAE to expand production. I think Saudi Arabia will certainly want to expand their production as quickly as possible to try to dull the higher prices in order to maintain a stiff undercurrent to demand. That might provide the possibility of some setbacks in this market. I think overall, the downside movement is going to be limited, probably to the mid-80 area on the nearby contracts right now. The back months might be more inclined to break harder, particularly if we start to see the supplies come on and the inventories increase.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. That is Stephen Platt. He is with Archer Financial Services. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Don't forget, you can buy your tickets for the Spring Outlook there. That's Tuesday, March the 8th at the Beef House. The cost is just $25.